That's it. Okie doke. So, extrasolar planets. So, lots that one can say about extrasolar planets. I imagine it's something that maybe you get a lot of questions about, because this is one field in astronomy that's been extraordinarily successful at getting press releases out. I mean, you see a bit of a change. It used to be the case that the press release would be, just be, hey, we found a planet. But we've found so many now that the press releases are about unusual planets, or, you know, weird planets, or potentially life-bearing planets, those kind of things. In fact, this is just off the web this morning. This is the PlanetQuest website, Jet Propulsion Laboratory maintain, and this is the latest count, 687 confirmed planets. So again, this maybe is one issue. I don't know whether this has occurred to you as potentially troublesome, but it may be me, you know, as the pedant in the audience. Not just that it shows here, but, you know, it's science presentations on the telly and things. I'm sitting there saying, grr, if only they would get this right. Because you often hear people refer to there being thousands of planets now discovered. Well, that's not strictly true. Because, as we'll see in a wee minute, the Kepler spacecraft has got well over 1,200 candidates, but they've not yet been confirmed. So this is the good website to go to if you want reliable info on what the kind of state of the art is. So this is from this morning, 687 planets confirmed, 474 stars with planets, from which you deduce that there's got to be a lot of stars that have got more than one planet. Well, that's no big surprise, because after all, ours does. Earth-like planets, zero. I'm afraid it's still zero, but there are a number of Earth-like candidates. So again, you've just got to be a wee bit careful. I suppose if you get questions about stuff that's been in the press, the various press releases, most of those press releases are to do with tentative discoveries. They're to do with candidate planets that aren't yet confirmed, but, you know, Kepler in particular, because NASA's so good at this sort of thing, have got very good at putting press releases out anyway, just to kind of capture the public's imagination.
Mark,
yes?
The other day I read a release that suggested that there were a couple of different catalogues in addition to NASA's catalogue.
Sure.
Yep. Identified. Is it best to use the NASA website, or is it best
well,
to...
Well, as far as... Absolutely. I mean, the NASA one is, as far as I can tell, pretty up to date, and they are good at capturing information from the various other missions. In fact, you can see in the front page, 10 in transit, so that's CODOT, so that's a French mission, it's a European mission, and they are using a small satellite, analogous to what Kepler's doing, to look for transits, and therefore those are completely independent of the Kepler discoveries, and completely independent of many of the ground-based telescopes that are looking for planets, but they're still recorded on this website. So, I mean, it's always good to just have a look at multiple sources. One of the things I'll do after today is I'll collect together some useful web links on all of these topics. But I would say that this one, the GPL PlanetQuest site, is the best. It's a kind of gold standard, just the quality of information you have. I know a lot of it is way beyond anything you would ever need in here, but they've got, for example, information about the orbital characteristics of the planets, you know, how big they are, how far away from the star they orbit, all those kind of things that maybe some of your audiences might want to know about, you know. There's some general characteristics of exoplanets that I imagine you're probably all very familiar with, if you've looked at this at all, and that's that the ones that we've found so far, by and large, are very close to their parent star. And the reason is, it makes them easier to find. It's not necessarily that all the planets elsewhere in the universe are really close to their star. It's an example of what we call in science a selection effect. If you go looking for exoplanets and you can only find the ones that are close to their star, then you shouldn't be surprised that those are the ones you find. And what's changing since this field really kicked off is that we're now getting better at finding smaller planets further away from the parent star, but we just haven't quite found one kind of like the Earth yet, which means at roughly the distance of the Earth from the Sun and orbiting a Sun-like star. Now, why that should be? Well, that's all tied up with how we find planets in the first place. How we detect extrasolar planets? If you were doing a planetarium show in here and you wanted to talk a wee bit about exoplanets, I'll make a couple of specific suggestions about linking it to the stars in a minute. But if you didn't have any slides to use, but you just still wanted to talk about the notion of gravity, well, really that's what it's all about. Of course, you don't want to use the scary equation, but it's just the idea that stars and planets sort of orbit each other, but because the planet's small and the star's big, then it means that essentially the planet moves a lot and the star hardly moves at all. And I think a good analogy for the kind of audiences that you're going to have in here would be to think about a seesaw. That if you're on a seesaw, and say my daughter's nearly 8 now, so she doesn't really go at the swings anymore, but when she used to, of course, to make it work, if I was on the other end, I'd have to go close to the middle so that we would get it balanced. So the star is like me, you know, massive object, and the planet is like, you know, a child. Let's say when my daughter was 3 or 4, she must have been, well, I don't know what, about at least 5 times less massive than me. So consequently, you know, the sort of laws of how we balance things, she would have to be at least 5 times further away from the centre to make it balance. So what that means in astronomy terms is that you've got the star wobbling because the planet is making it wobble, it's causing it to move. And that means even if you can't see the planet, you can still tell it's there because of the wobble. Now, how we measure that is by using the properties of the colours of light, what astronomers call spectroscopy, which is amazingly useful. We use it for all sorts of things in astrophysics. So we're looking at the shifting of spectral lines in the spectrum of a star as the planet orbits the star and it makes the star move. And it means that even if you can't see the planet at all, you can tell it's there because of the wobble. So the very first one to be discovered, I've only got a few slides in this, so I'll just rattle through them and then we'll stop for a bit and have a wee chat about it. The very first one to be discovered, 51 Peg, I'll show you where that is in the sky in a wee minute. And the pattern of motion of the star caused by the planet is what we call simple harmonic motion. It's like what you would get with a pendulum swinging back and forth. It's the same science, the same physics, and it's, you know, going up and down. So again, you know, primary kids would be a bit spooked by this, but if you talked about this to secondary children, you know, it's the sines and cosines that they learn about in maths at school. It's the same basic stuff. And the amplitude of that is 55 metres per second. So that means that sometimes the star's moving away from us at 55 metres per second, sometimes it's moving towards us at 55 metres per second as the planet orbits around the star. So when you've got multiple planetary systems, you know, stars with multiple planets, that graph just gets more complicated, but it's the same basic idea, that you're telling the planets are there because of the effect they have on the star. So that was 1995, so where is it? Well, that's the Earth's impression, so it's quite close to its parent star, hence why it produces such a big wobble. And it's actually just close to the square of Pegasus. So, well, you know, we could go to the stars, but you all know where the square of Pegasus is. It's one of the things you point out in here when you're showing people where Andromeda, the Andromeda galaxy, is, which we'll get to a wee bit later on. You see, this is it. This is where I'll embarrass myself, and I won't be able to find it. Right, it's not up yet. That's Ah, good, good. Well, yeah, okay. So, is there a pointer, Joe?
Yeah.
Right, good. Forgot to bring mine. I'll come up. Thank you. Excellent. So, if you did want to talk about exoplanets, then this is a fairly easy one, because 51 Peg is just kind of halfway in between the two stars on the right-hand side of the square of Pegasus, so that's like round about there. If I've got that the right way round, as I think I have. So, it's not a particularly remarkable star, quite like the Sun, but in a way that's the main point, that we're looking for planets around Sun-like stars, because we think those are the ones where there's the best chance of finding a planet like the Earth. But, searching for them by this Doppler wobble technique, the velocity wobble, is going to make it very hard to find a planet like the Earth, because the Earth's not that massive, and it's also comparatively quite far away from its star, so it doesn't make the Sun wobble very much. So the kinds of planets that we've generally found are called hot Jupiters, which means they're like Jupiter mass, big. You know, you can fit the Earth, what, 300 and odd times inside Jupiter, but they're also much closer to their parent star. So again, think of the seesaw analogy. Okay? So that's just zooming in on it again, showing where it is, 51 Peg. Nothing very special, but it's not all that far away. It's about a distance of about 50 light years. So we're seeing the light from that as it was 50 years ago. Oops. That wasn't right. That's me going right. Pardon me? Well, I think maybe not, if that's all right. I've got a couple of movies, just wanted to say about Kepler, and then what we'll do is we'll put the slides away and we'll bring the lights up and we can just have a chat, sort of general questions. So, Doppler wobble, this technique of seeing how the planet makes the star wobble, that has still found the vast majority of the 687 planets we saw listed at the beginning. But that is about to change because the Kepler satellite was launched in 2009 and it's looking for planets another way. It's looking for them via what we call transits, which means the planet passes between us and the star and it causes the brightness of the star to dip a wee bit, generally by, you know, less than 1%, but if you measure the brightness of the star carefully enough, you can tell that it's happening. And as I mentioned, Kepler has reported well over 1,200 candidates. So where it is, it's looking, well, it's up in orbit, but what it's looking at is a patch of the sky close to Cygnus the Swan. So this is just little squares, which is the essentially just like a digital camera. It's what's called a charge-coupled device, a CCD, that's imaging bits of the sky, you know, a pixel map, a few thousand by a few thousand, just like, you know, typical digital camera would take an image of us. And in those pixel images are stars, and what it's doing is looking at them over and over again and seeing whether the brightness of the star changes. And if it does, then that's an indication that there's maybe a planet orbiting the star and blocking out some of the star's light. Okay, so here's a pretty up-to-date diagram. This is all the candidates from Kepler that were reported earlier this year. So again, this is maybe a wee bit technical for typical audiences in here, but you might ask yourself, well, you know, why does it take so long to be sure that there's really a planet there? Well, this comes back to something that we call Kepler's laws. So the satellite is kind of well named. It's named after Johannes Kepler, that helped us to understand the orbits of planets. What Kepler's laws showed back in the early 1600s was that the further a planet is from its star, well, the Sun was all he knew about, the further a planet is from the Sun, the longer it will take to orbit the Sun, and that there's a good rule that kind of defines how that all works. So if you're looking for a star like the Earth, a planet like the Earth, about the same distance as the Earth is from the Sun, but orbiting another star, well, that basically means you're looking for a planet that's going to have an orbit of about a year, because the Earth's got an orbit of about a year. So it crosses in front of the star, Kepler sees it, sees a wee dip in the brightness, but you've got to wait a whole another year before it happens again. So that's why it's going to take several years before these transits are confirmed. If you just saw the dip once, well, it could just be a fault with the digital camera. So all of these candidates, it's going to be a year or two before they're fully confirmed. The ones that have been confirmed already are the ones which are much, much closer to the star, so they go round much faster. So you don't have to wait very long before you see the next transit. Okay? So what kind of systems have been claimed? Oh, darn, done it again. I keep pressing the wrong button here. Determined to tell you about gravitational waves, but that will come later. That will come later on. Exoplanets first. All in good time. So I've got a couple of movies from Kepler. I know, obviously, in the current configuration, it doesn't really lend itself so well in the planetarium to showing the movies, but again, we're sort of working on that. I've been talking to Joe and the others about maybe trying to get our mirror dome system to trial out in here, which allows you to project images on to the spherical or hemispherical roof. So just for the moment, just to kind of talk you through these, this is just a simulation of showing roughly what happens. You see the brightness change. The time scale for these transits to happen is just a few hours. And then this is an animation, again, completely, you know, artist's impression stuff, of one of the systems that has tentatively been claimed. This is one which hasn't just got one planet transiting, but as many as six. This is called Kepler 14. And this was reported back in February. And remarkably, all of the six planets are orbiting closer to the parent star than Venus would be in our own solar system. In fact, most of them are closer than Mercury. So they're all going to be pretty hot, and they're not going to be good places to look for life like us. But it's an amazing system, and Kepler has found that. Again, not yet confirmed, but the suspicion is it's really there. And then you might have caught this one. Some of you will probably know that I'm a big Star Wars fan. And this is a system where the planet is orbiting two stars, so it's a bit like Tatooine. And okay, we don't know very much about the planet, but the orbit has allowed us to make animations like this, and then to speculate wildly about what the planet might look like, and even whether you've got a Tatooine-like sunset. So, I mean, these are all movies that are freely available on the NASA website, but, you know, I've gathered a bunch of them together. I'll make them available just to kind of save you the bother of having to track them down yourself. I've also made some YouTube videos about Kepler, so they might be worth a look as well. And then final one here, this is one of the Earth-like candidates. Now, again, we really don't know much about this yet, but the suspicion is that it's in the habitable zone. That's the distance from the star where liquid water could exist. But everything else is complete speculation, and it might be many decades, even hundreds of years, before we would have sufficiently powerful telescopes to be able to look at these planets and actually tell what their surface looks like. So you can tell how big they are, how massive they are, how big their orbits are. Those things are relatively easy and we can do them already. But what the planet's made of, what its atmosphere's made of, what the continents look like, whether it's got oceans or not, those things probably lie many decades from now. But, you know, we're getting there. So that's just a few sort of thoughts about exoplanets. So I guess, Joe, do you want to bring the lights up? And we can just...